You're listening to SBS News.
Ah, Australia. No one loves the big things more than me. The big pineapple, the big banana, big potato, prawny. But I reckon we can find an even bigger big thing.
Bigger?
I reckon Australia is the big thing.
Yep.
Let's go big, Australia, because there's nothing bigger or better than a holiday here.
That's from Tourism Australia's 2021 $9 million Epic Holidays campaign, encouraging Australians to enjoy the benefits of a domestic holiday. But the reality is most of us have had no other choice, with international borders closed as the COVID pandemic continues to affect life around the world. Australian Bureau of Statistics data from June 2021 showed departures decreased by 94.5% when compared with pre-COVID levels in June 2019. David Bierman is a senior lecturer in tourism at the University of Technology in Sydney.
Prior to 2020, most people thought, particularly in developed countries, that they had a right to travel internationally. That right disappeared after COVID in many, many countries in the world, including Australia.
ABS data from June 2021 also showed there were just over 150,000 visitors to Australia, a drop of 97.7% from 2020. This saw revenue from the international tourism sector drop by 96.1%. COVID also brought a sudden halt to decades of cheap travel, which saw the affordability of air travel drop to the point where international flights became much more accessible to many Australians. This Qantas television advertisement from the 1980s highlights that trend.
Almost 70 years ago, Longreach was a familiar name to long-distance travellers. It was the home of Qantas, a small but enterprising airline.
Mr. Bierman, a former travel agent, says the price of airfares began to slowly drop from 1970 onwards with the emergence of the jumbo jet.
We went through about 50 years from around about 1970 through to about the beginning of 2020, when every year travel was getting cheaper and cheaper. I started as a travel consultant in 1981. With JetSet, which no longer exists as a country, as a company. And we were often selling return fares to, say, London or Paris for around about $2,000. Now, by 2020, you didn't have to be getting a special deal to get an airfare between Sydney and London for about $1,250. So the fares had actually come down. And that not only applied internationally, it applied also domestically.
Associate Professor in the Department of Philosophy at Macquarie University, Robert Sinnerbrink, has looked closely at why people travel. Dr. Sinnerbrink says human beings have been travelling since we first emerged out of Africa. He says we are made to move, to travel, whether in the form of migration, religious pilgrimage, or rites of passage.
It's a sense of pushing your boundaries, but also experiencing something new or experiencing even familiar things in a new way. So, and I guess for modern folks, being able to travel feels almost like a part of modern life and something we've come to expect, whether it's for work purposes or for holidays or the kind of end of school ritual where, you know, as a young person, you travel interstate or maybe overseas or go backpacking for a year. It's treated as a kind of ritual. And I think that's something we've come to really value and take for granted.
Beyond leisure travel, COVID-19 restrictions also fundamentally affected the lives of migrants in Australia. Migration to Australia fell dramatically since the beginning of the pandemic, but is expected to bounce back in 2022. The latest official population data suggests net overseas migration will remain negative this financial year before slowly recovering to 235,000 per year from 2024 to 2025. This will leave the population smaller, with around 700,000 fewer people in 2025 than was expected before the pandemic. For those migrants currently in Australia, connecting with family and friends back in their homelands has been almost impossible. SBS Arabic TV journalist Nabil Al-Nashar has experienced this as both a journalist reporting on the issue and as a migrant from Egypt directly affected by border closures around the world.
My family is spread across four continents. I'm in Australia, my parents, one's in Africa, one's in Asia, and my sister's in Europe. So we heavily rely on seeing each other through travel. And during the pandemic, during the lockdown, it just seized up completely. Most of my family were able to get together for my sister's wedding, and she's my only sibling. I had to miss out on that being here in Australia. I applied for an exemption, didn't get it. So that was really tough.
Travel for educational and business purposes has also dramatically changed because of COVID. Dr. Sinnerbrink says employers are wary of endorsing travel because of worries about insurance and liability. As to what the long-term effects of the pandemic might be on this kind of travel for study, work and conference participation, Dr. Sinnerbrink says conference travel, face-to-face meetings, long regarded as a key feature of collaborative work in all sorts of areas, are all looking more and more like a luxury.
I mean, we can do an awful lot remotely, and it's been quite incredible to see how quickly people adapted. I know, you know, within the education sector, both high school teachers and university teachers had to pivot, as they say, very quickly and become used to, you know, fully online kind of teaching and learning. But, you know, as people often point out, there's a lot that isn't quite captured in that virtual experience. You know, there's a lot of communication that happens more readily in a face-to-face environment. There are all those little informal meetings and spaces and conversations that happen, say, at a conference. You know, people often say the most interesting and important conversations happen after the presentation, not necessarily during the presentation.
SBS digital reporter Biwa Kwan has benefited both personally and professionally from study overseas. In her case, studying the Mandarin language in China, where her family originally migrated from. It's an experience that's been replicated by countless Australians who return to their ancestral homelands hoping to better learn the language or simply connect with the culture of their families. And while not all children of immigrants have this desire, for Biwa, travelling to China in 2010 to study was something she really wanted to do.
For me, it has been an important part for me to go to the country, learn the language and reclaim that part of my cultural heritage. There's a sense that with China being such a, you know, a more influential player on the geopolitical stage, a lot of people do want that professional skill set of having those language skills. So there's kind of a dual purpose, I think, for a lot of ABCs like myself, Australian-born Chinese, to have that adeptness with the language, which is facilitated by time spent in the country and formal time learning how to read and write, not just the conversational in the family household type level of skill with Cantonese and Mandarin.
Another area likely to be affected post-COVID is the budget travel market. Dr. Bierman says there was a large number of Australians who travelled to Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia and various other parts of Southeast Asia with the expectation that it would be a very cheap holiday. He says Thailand, which in 2019 was attracting 14 million international visitors, got less than a million in 2020 and the same for 2021.
And they don't have the safety nets, the economic safety nets that, say, the Australian travel industry did. So in Australia, we had things like JobKeeper and other types of financial backups for tourism businesses. In Thailand and Indonesia and Malaysia, there were none of those sorts of government supports available. So the people finished up working. One day they were working in a hotel, the next day they were working tilling the soil, and that was the only way they could survive.
Dr. Bierman says while all of these countries would be anxious to have tourists back, any existing tourism infrastructure would have been severely affected by the pandemic. He also says high levels of COVID-19 infections, particularly in Southeast Asia, mean quarantine measures and testing are also likely to become part of tourist travel, which would increase the cost of budget travel.
So Fiji has opened up. Australians can go there. There are some very good travel deals to encourage people to go to Fiji from both the accommodation side and the air side. But the cost of actually getting tests every couple of days is actually very high. So I have a colleague of mine her and her husband have gone to Fiji. They got a great deal. I won't tell you how much they paid, but about a third of the cost of their tour is actually COVID tests. So this is going to be an ongoing problem probably for a while. I don't want to predict how long it's going to be.
There's also the option of virtual travel, offering alternative ways to travel the world using virtual and mixed reality technologies. Here's David Attenborough talking up a virtual reality trip in the Great Barrier Reef for the Natural History Museum in the UK in 2015.
Virtual reality is where you can put on apparatus, I mean basically it's goggles and earphones. Feeding into each of your eyes are images, so that's pretty exciting. Then suddenly you realise that with virtual reality, that if you hear a noise over there, you can turn round and actually your eye will travel round and you'll see something. And suddenly you are immersed in another world.
Dr. Sinnerbrink says while philosophers have talked up the benefits of seeing the world, they've also questioned the modern obsession with travel.
I think philosophers have been very divided about the the virtues and vices of travel. I mean, some philosophers have been very passionate advocates of movement and travel as a way of transforming oneself, but others have been sceptical and wary and suggesting, look, it's a distraction. While it may be enjoyable and entertaining, it doesn't necessarily change us fundamentally as people. In many ways, being more kind of grounded in our more familiar environments, gives us a more firm footing for, doing the sort of self-reflection or, work on oneself that you need to do in order to maybe, correct or improve your shortcomings or limitations.
Peggy Giacomelos, SBS News.